Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-argument episode of SCOTUScast. I'm your host, Spencer Caron. On November 30th, 2020, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Van Buren v. United States. The question before the court was whether a person who is authorized to access information on a computer for certain purposes violates Section 1030A2 of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act if he accesses the same information for an improper use. Orrin Kerr is professor of law at UC Berkeley School of Law, and he joins us today to discuss this case's oral argument.
So this is a case about the federal computer hacking statute, the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, Title 18, Section 1030, which is enacted in the 1980s, and it has a very broad prohibition in the statute that it's a crime to access a computer without authorization or exceed authorized access to that computer to obtain information. And that is a federal misdemeanor, and then it can become a federal felony if that act of unauthorized access is undertaken in certain situations to make a money, make profit out of it, or in furtherance of some tortious or criminal act. But the basic prohibition is unauthorized access to a computer, either accessing the computer without authorization or exceeding authorized access. And the question was whether that statute was violated by a police officer, Mr. Van Buren, who accessed a sensitive state database for non-official reasons. He's a police officer, and he's been given a username and password to access a state database of Georgia state database that had basically personal information about, I think it was like parking tickets or that sort of thing, sort of tickets, legal issues that different people had in the database. And he was paid by somebody to access that database. There was a guy in town who offered him a couple thousand dollars to look up someone for a personal reason, because the guy wanted to do basically a personal background check on someone that he was interested in. And the officer took the money and did the query of the database. Turned out the guy who was offering to pay him that money was working undercover with the FBI. And so Van Buren is then charged with a violation of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. And then also he has wire fraud charges, which are still pending based on basically a bribery theory, which is probably, when you hear those facts, is more what you think this case should be about. And so it so happens that this case was charged in the 11th Circuit, and the 11th Circuit has a prior precedent which had very similar facts, which it said that was an unauthorized access under the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. And the Second Circuit and the Ninth Circuit, depending on how you look at it, maybe some other circuits, had their own precedent saying that was not an unauthorized access under the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. So the U.S. Supreme Court takes the case to figure out which one of those views is right. So the case gets to the Supreme Court, and what's interesting about it, to my mind, is that the statute doesn't, to my mind, really seem to answer how far the statute goes. And let me read the relevant text to you. So the basic prohibition, again, is accessing a computer without authorization or exceeding authorized access. That's the basic language. And then access without authorization is not defined, but exceeding authorized access is defined. So let me read that to you. Section 1030E6 says the term exceeds authorized access means to access a computer with authorization and to use such access to obtain or alter information in the computer that the accessor is not entitled so to obtain or alter. There was a lot of discussion in the oral argument today about the word so. What does so mean? So usually is some sort of a reference to some other prior act. And there was a lot of discussion as to what is the prior act that the word so is referencing. To my mind, that discussion ultimately goes nowhere because the answer is the statute doesn't say. The statute is terribly unclear as to what it is that's prohibited. And in fact, the definition of exceeds authorized access is basically circular. It exceeds authorized access to have access and then to do something you're not allowed to do. But the statute doesn't then answer what determines whether you're allowed to do something. And there are these two basic ways of thinking about the statute. One is that it's limited to breaking in. It's limited to hacking. It's limited to bypassing a code-based restriction like guessing somebody else's password and accessing their account or hacking in by exploiting some sort of security flaw that gives you access to a closed account or computer that you're not supposed to have access to. And everybody agrees the statute covers that. And then the real question is, under the statute, does it also cover violating some sort of a written or oral restriction that the computer owner places on the use of the computer? So we all use computers every day, and we know that there are terms of service on websites, and there are terms of service on our internet provider, and maybe our if we have a work email account, there are terms of use on that. There are all sorts of written restrictions that say you're not supposed to do this, you're not supposed to do that. Does the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act cover that? Does violating a written restriction on use of a computer violate the CFAA? And that's the issue on which that's really the heart of this case. Does the CFAA, does this Computer Fraud and Abuse Act only apply to hacking, or does it also cover somebody who has an account, who has access, or who is using the computer legitimately, who then violates the written restriction, violates the term of service on the website, or violates the written restriction on the database? And that mattered in Van Buren because Van Buren was told when he was trained on how to use the database, hey, Van Buren, you can only use this database for work-related reasons. You're only allowed to do queries about private information of people when you're doing a query for your official duties as a police officer. You're not allowed to just check out people just because you want to. That violates the written term. And everybody agrees that violating the written term was bad. Maybe he could be fired for it. And accepting the bribe could be bribery. The question is whether violating the written restriction that said you're only allowed to access this computer for work-related reasons, whether that was a separate Computer Fraud and Abuse Act crime, essentially hacking into the computer because it violated the written restriction. So the case was argued this morning, and Jeff Fisher of the Stanford Supreme Court Clinic was arguing for Van Buren. And he made the argument, he made a couple arguments. First, he argued that the word so in the definition of an exceeding authorized access only refers to hacking. And so the definition of exceeds authorized access basically covers insider hacking. So his vision of the statute is that if you're an outsider, you guess somebody else's username and password and access their account, you've committed an access without authorization. On the other hand, if you're an insider, you have your own account on a system and you hack into somebody else's account on that same system, well, then you're exceeding authorized access to that computer. You have your own account rights on the computer. The server, for example, is hosting, say, the email for your company, but you're exceeding authorized access when you hack into somebody else's email account, and that's how to understand the statute. Fisher spent a lot of time pressing the implications of the government's reading and how broad those implications would be, which is an issue because the broadest version of the statute is just criminalizes unauthorized access, either access without authorization or exceeding authorized access to any protected computer. And a protected computer is basically anything with a microchip. It doesn't need to be connected to the internet even, and obtaining information. And the legislative history of obtaining information is pretty clear that obtains just means sees. Anytime somebody sees information, that counts as obtaining information. It doesn't require sensitive information. It's any information. It doesn't require valuable information. It's any information. Those valuable or sensitive information parts can make it a felony violation, but the mere misdemeanor violation is really any information. So Fisher says, well, if you accept the idea that the government can prosecute somebody who violates a written restriction on any protected computer, that means that every time anyone intentionally violates any term of service, they are committing a federal crime. And so that would mean, you know, think about it, majority of American adults have Facebook accounts. Well, Facebook requires that you post everything in your own name. You have to use your real name. You have to have real biographical information. Well, if you lied, if you said you were married when actually you're divorced on your Facebook page, Fisher says, well, that's an unauthorized access to Facebook because you're accessing Facebook in violation of its terms of service, rendering that exceeding authorized access under the government's view. And it can't be that the statute actually is that broad, because if it's that broad, everybody is committing a federal crime all day long because we're all violating these terms of service. So that was Fisher's argument. The government responds that actually there's a difference between kind of a core violation of the statute, and these hypotheticals that Fisher is raising are really fanciful ideas. The government wouldn't prosecute somebody, and there are ways of reading the statute more narrowly such that the parade of horribles that Fisher is offering would not be the case. So the government's version of the statute is first that the word "so" was intended to considerably expand the scope of the statute, that the access without authorization prong is hacking, and the exceeds authorized access prong is violating a written restriction because of the word "so." That's the government's argument. And the government says there are all sorts of ways of limiting the statute to avoid overly broad results, this idea that sort of everybody who's using a computer is committing a crime. And in a world where we're all using computers, we're basically all in violation of the CFAA. The government's view is that that wasn't the case because there are some implicit limits on the statute. What are those implicit limits? Well, the government said one limit is that authorization, the concept of authorization, is about some specific individualized authorization, not en masse sort of group authorization. And terms of service are really about like telling everyone can't do something. And that's different from telling one person you can't do something. So this idea that maybe there's some sort of clarity required or some individualization required, and that when you do that, some of the abuses of somebody lying on a dating website, for example, those would no longer be a crime. Another argument that the government made is that you implicitly need some sort of an authorization to access the computer to trigger the authorization, the unauthorized access statute. So this idea would be that maybe you can't commit an unauthorized access for a public website. So if somebody puts up a public website and has terms of service saying you're not allowed to do this on the website, the government is saying in this case, well, that wouldn't be, or at least wouldn't necessarily be a crime, because there should be a way of interpreting authorization to require that there be some sort of a password gate that a person has to get through. That maybe the answer is because this database that Van Buren accessed was not something publicly available, that's what makes violating the terms of service a crime, and that's different from a public website that anyone could use. So the government says that this statute's actually a lot narrower than the defense is arguing, and you should read this word "so" to implicitly adopt a broader theory of unauthorized access, but that the court should interpret other parts of the statute more narrowly to prevent the statute from sort of being the statute that makes everybody a criminal. So that was those are the two different arguments. Not only talked about how the different justices might have come out. There's a lot of trying to figure out first how much does the word "so" tell us. I tend to think Justice Kagan had it right when she basically said this one word "so" it doesn't tell us anything. There's plausible arguments on the government side and plausible arguments on the defense side. The word "so" itself is not so meaningful. The government responded, well, under the surplusage rule, you have to treat each word as having distinct meaning. And then the difficulty with that is that, you know, what meaning do you give the word "so"? In that context, it's just not obvious that that word has any particular meaning and really suggests a dramatic expansion of the statute, which is a view that I think you could hear in echoes from questions by Justice Kagan and then also from Justice Kavanaugh. They kind of echoed that view the most. The arguments, the questions of the justices that were the most sort of suggested which side the justices were on more than others. I think Justice Sotomayor and Justice Gorsuch were the two that sort of stood out in that regard, both of them suggesting that they were on Van Buren's side and not the government side. Justice Sotomayor focused on the breadth of the statute and the lack of clarity that the statute covered these very far-flung hypotheticals, far removed from the kind of core problem of the statute. And Justice Gorsuch was particularly withering in his questions directed to the Eric Feigin, the assistant or deputy solicitor general, arguing for the government. Justice Gorsuch was asking questions like, you know, we've seen a bunch of these cases where the government takes these very broad interpretations. Sort of, why is the Solicitor General's office bringing these cases? Why is this a federal case? And when you hear the justice say, why are you bringing this case? And he even said, I think at one point his language was, it's not the job of the Solicitor General's office to rubber stamp theories of prosecution from the U.S. attorney's offices, and suggesting that that's a perspective when you hear that. You're saying, okay, well, Justice Gorsuch clearly of the mind that this statute should be read narrowly. And Gorsuch in particular was raising, he said, there's a bunch of these cases. There's Bond and there's McDonald and there's a bunch of cases where in recent years the Supreme Court has adopted narrow interpretations of federal criminal statutes. And he seemed to be saying, isn't this just the next in line? What are we doing here? Suggesting he was going to rule in Van Buren's favor. Justice Kavanaugh also echoed that view. He reiterated some of Justice Gorsuch's view on that, although I think on the whole, Justice Kavanaugh's take was a little bit harder to read. I think he probably was leaning towards Van Buren's side, but it wasn't as I think clear as it would have been from the questions that Justice Gorsuch asked. Justice Barrett, Amy Coney Barrett, asked a question about, can we interpret the word authorization to implicitly have scope? So she focused on the idea that the defense was treating authorization as an on-off switch. Either you have authorization or you don't have authorization. And Justice Barrett's question was, is the concept of authorization one that actually implies scope? Kind of along the lines of agency principles, where you might have an agent of a company, you know, the bus driver or something like that, or the truck driver, who's implicitly authorized to use property for some things and not for other things, essentially maybe incorporating agency law, which would favor the government's view. That's sort of I think in a lot of ways, that's the gist of what the government is arguing. They have a textual argument based on the word so, but ultimately, I think really they're getting at kind of an agency-based view. The government, though, didn't sort of immediately grab onto that idea. The government stuck with its textual approach for the most part. And if there's an agency, I mean, one of the tricky things is that what if there's an agency-based approach inherent in the word authorization, what that means is anyone who violates the agency of the computer owner in using somebody else's computer violates federal criminal law and can be arrested and prosecuted and jailed for that. And what's remarkable about that, I mean, think about how many times you use somebody else's computer. You're probably using somebody else's computer right now. And you might be thinking, wait a minute, I'm using my own computer. I've got my laptop or my phone. But you are getting files, you're getting data from a server somewhere. Federal Society has a server where you are downloading this podcast, or maybe you're getting your podcast from Apple Podcasts or something like that, or listening on in through a telephone network. That's somebody else's server. And so that means even though the end computer is yours, the computer you're getting the data from is somebody else's. And so are you an agent of them? What if they enact terms of service saying you can only download a podcast from Apple Podcast if you're first name is Ralph or some completely arbitrary line. Well, in that case, if your name isn't Ralph, sorry, you violated the term of service and you've committed an unauthorized access and could be arrested and prosecuted. So I think that's there. Ultimately, some of the different ways of cutting this run into the extraordinary scope of the statute, which is really what the defense was arguing for from Jeff Fisher.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.